We have a treat. We have Kat Kaur on the phone, or Kaur. And Kat, if you could correct me on your last name, I wasn't sure on that.
Well, both ways you said it is correct. Kaur, and some people say Kaur.
Yeah. Okay, great. And Kat Kaur is one of the founding members of Third World and one of the classic roots reggae band and really a fusion band moving into the 80s and 90s and still going strong. And Third World will be headlining our World Music Reggae and World Music Festival on Saturday. And it looks like the weather's going to hold out. We're going to have in the mid-80s. Sunny and one of those perfect Duluth days that we all love right on the harbor there. So, Kat, I'd like to ask you a few questions about reggae, about world beat music. And so how did you get your start with ska reggae music in Jamaica?
Well, there are a number of factors involved in that. I think that my influence would have been mainly ska, going into Toots and the Maytals, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Alton Ellis, you know, the Paradigms with John Holt, Bob Andy, of course, is a very, very key person in terms of, the foundation of what we know today as reggae music. And, there's quite a bit of rock steady influence as well, because you had people like Delroy Wilson and, the rock steady era, Alton Ellis was big in the rock steady era. So those would have been the influences. But as for the whole Third World thing, what really took place was that I played with Inner Circle for a couple of years. I joined them when I was very young. My first musical experience was a group that we formed, a garage band or a road band called the Alley Cats. And when I say road, I mean the road I lived on. Three members of the band lived on that road. And we came together as friends and decided to try our hand at music. But, for me, I had already been into music since I was six. My mom had me in cello lessons and so on. So I had that background, and I was able to use that background. And when the time came along, when I was about 11, 12, I was able to take up the guitar and catch on really quickly with the guitar. So I learned really quick, and also I had a very good musical ear, so I could listen to songs on the radio and I could pick out the chords and help the other members of the group to find out what was really going on in the song and how we were going to play the song. So I had that little head start there, having been to music lessons and having had, been trained in theory and stuff like that. And when I joined Inner Circle, I stayed with them. I joined them when I was 13, and I stayed with them until I was 70. And then I broke away from them and wanted to do my own thing, start a group where we'd write our own music, and we were, wanted to do something different and something really creative. So that was my real reason. There was no animosity of any kind or anything with Inner Circle. It was all good. But it was just that it was time for me to make a different move. And Prilly Hamilton came along with me. Carl Barovia came along with me, former members of Inner Circle also. And shortly thereafter, Ibu Cooper came and Richard Daly. And that was really the original Third World that played that very first show in August of 1973. No.
I was going to ask you, too, one of the things that might be quite sort of interesting, exciting. What was the sort of music scene going down there? I know it was sound systems in the neighborhoods, and there's, a lot of music being played in Jamaica and Kingston and also in the Interlands. What was that scene like? Because it seemed to have a real sort of density of musicians going on at the same time.
Yes, it did. we had a big density of musicians at the time because a lot of kids who were influenced by the Beatles, influenced by Scatolites, influenced by pop music that was coming out that we were hearing. You know, we had a lot of music coming in from Miami. We had people who used to go up to the States and buy records and bring them back, you know, and sometimes do them over in ska. There are a lot of records that we thought were Jamaican originals or not Jamaican originals. There were songs that people bought abroad and brought home, and then they did the reggae version of the song. I remember one particular instance. I remember Manu Dibango's song, Soul Makossa. There was a guy who was a producer. I don't quite remember if it was Harry J or I don't quite remember who it was, but he hired Inner Circle to play that song over. And that song, Soul Makossa, we played it. We recorded it before that song ever got played on the air in Jamaica. So Inner Circle's version was one of the first versions of that song, and we did it exactly like Manu Dibango. And that was interesting, you know, but it's just one of the examples I'm showing you of how things happened in that time. You know, there was a very dense music scene, you know. I mean, there were many, many bands. There was Tomorrow's Children, there was Baron Lee and the Dragonaires, there was Hell's Angels, there was Inner Circle, there was... Oh man, a plethora of bands earlier.
I've heard the quote that things were tough in the inner city there in the different shanty towns, and they said that there's two ways out of the shanty town, and that was a hit single or a police bullet. I mean, there's sort of that kind of idea that everybody wanted to be a star, and that was going to be their ticket out. Maybe is that does that ring true for you?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, right now, we're, as far as I'm concerned, and most of the members of Thorough are concerned, we were a little bit more privileged in terms that our parents were achievers, you know?
Sure.
Especially my parents. I mean, most of them were scholars, you know? So we had that going for us. But I wouldn't say that we were rich, but we weren't poor, you know, that kind of way. So, but the whole thing about it is that when you live in Jamaica, poverty is right next door to you, regardless of where you are. You know, you could be the richest guy out there. You're not going to get away with not seeing poverty. You're going to see poverty every single day. And chances are you'll have friends who are less privileged than you because our society is very integrated. And we, you know, we move from friendship to friendship and from person to person. Some of the students that I went on, that some very poor guys like Robbie Shakespeare, who were very talented, you know, and a lot of other people too, you know, Jackie Jackson and Winston Wright and all that kind of man. I mean, these guys were bigger guys to me, but at the same time, it was great to get their influence and their, you know, their experience. Sure. As a young, it had to mold me, you know, it had to make me aware of the music of my own people, of the music of my own country, and that was very special for me. So, yeah, I would say that, you know, it's not necessarily as one-tracked as how you put it, because there are a lot of ways to come out of the ghetto. You don't have to have a bullet or a music or a guitar.
Sure.
You know, as time went on, as you know, Jamaica has tremendous sprinters. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people found their way out of the ghetto through sports as well. So sports and arts played a very big part in our development.
Sure.
That's the best way to answer the question.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of the lyrics from roots reggae anyway have a lot to, you know, and Bob Marley made it famous with his sort of exploration of his upbringing in Trenchtown and that. So I think that may be where a lot of that notoriety comes in, where, of course, there's a diverse path into music and out of music and that kind of thing. But I was going to ask you, too, you know, you talked about the sort of the movement from ska to rock steady to reggae. And prior to that, probably Mentos really influenced the early ska, sort of mixing that with R&B from the U.S. and what have you. You know, at a certain point, it became very, well, and it continues to be a very political voice, or at least a voice of human rights. When do you think that happened in popular music in Jamaica? And when, you know, your song, Third World's Famous hit single there, 96 Degrees in the Shade, 1865, is about a major uprising revolution, really, in a lot of ways. So if you could sort of address that.
The fact is that reggae has always been a voice of the people. It's always been a voice of militancy. It's always been a voice of protest. And I think that that really comes from, you know, the very ethnic roots of it all right down the line. I mean, if you look at a movie like The Harder They Come, the basic story that movie is telling is true. You know, it's true for many people. I mean, the characters are fictitious, yes, but it's very, very, very much in the right kind of blend of what really was. Here's a guy who had lyrics, and the lyrics that he's basically singing, he's singing that, you know, things are hard and all of that, but if you think things are hard, I am just as hard, kind of thing. And, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going, kind of thing. And I think that reggae has always portrayed that, you know, and it's a testament to Jamaican spirit and the kind of militant voice that we have had in the world. You know, it's not even just, it's from a long time. It's from the sugar workers in the 1930s. It goes right back to 1865, the protests of Paul Bogle. You know, it comes from the whole slave experience. It comes from, you know, being emancipated and having a voice to sing and having an expression to express. You know, and West Indians, generally speaking, I think I've portrayed that through the years, because if you look at West Indian poetry, even the poetry from Grenada, from, you know, St. Vincent, Barbados, Trinidad, particularly Trinidad, you know, you'll find that they always have that. And in fact, I think that Trinidadian calypso, original, not soca now, the original calypso, had a lot to do with our Jamaican influence too, and influence the mento and so on, because there was a big trade-off of songs in those days between Trinidad and Jamaica. You know, you had Lord Laro, who was originally a Trinidadian, who came to Jamaica and made a name for himself, and, you know, he became part of the Jamaican music. He became part of the Jamaican music scene, as it was.
Sure.
So we had quite a bit of integration between the Caribbean and stuff. But there was a time when rocksteady and reggae, where Jamaica just stepped out. You know, we just stepped right out and left all the Caribbean islands behind. And in fact, what we really did was we influenced all the Caribbean islands, because our music became the most popular music throughout the Caribbean. So. And to this day, I would say that Jamaican music is by far the most popular music throughout the entire Caribbean.
Yeah, and I being a global music, I mean, you can't really go anywhere in the world without mentioning some artists or reggae music. You'll hear it in, you know, Central Africa, of course, in Asia. There's not a place. So out of this small island with a big heart and a lot of creativity comes this revolutionary music and artistic expression, and I'm always very impressed with that.
Well, that is why we say this song, Reggae Ambassador, the big, big music from the Little Rock.
Yep. Now, moving on to sort of more contemporary, you know, we talked about a lot of bands, a lot of energy in Jamaica during the 60s and early 70s. What's going on today in Jamaica in terms of popular music? I know, you know, I usually on my show play a lot of roots reggae, including contemporary roots reggae, but we have, you know, dancehall and even some of the reggaeton from other parts of the Caribbean. And maybe hip-hop entering into that. I know Damian Jr. Gung Marley, which produced your last single and upcoming album, has thrown in some hip-hop in there. So what's your sort of ideas on that?
Well, you had mentioned earlier on Afrobeat.
Sure.
And I would love to start there because as far as things go right now, that's one of the most popular forms of expression of you know, I mean, black music right now across the world. And it has a lot of reggae vibration in it. You know, in fact, it seems to me as if reggae influenced it big time. As far as reggaeton is concerned, you don't need to say anything more. The name itself says what it is. It's reggaeton. So, you know, it has this kind of reggae feeling to it and so on. And, you know, I think especially with Damien and how he's doing his thing, and all the Marleys, not just Damien, what they're doing is they're blending music. They're not just sticking to one expression. They're not just sticking to a reggae expression, although they can do that very, very well. That's what they know how to do first and foremost. But they're blending in some really cool stuff right now. You know, they're blending in R&B. They're blending in a lot of, you know, maybe hip-hop-ish kind of stuff, but all very creative from out of their own, you know, their own expression. So I think the music is in a good place right now. It's far more open than it was maybe 20 years ago or even 15 years ago. It's far more blended now. It's far more acceptable to be a reggae artist that does an R&B song now, or a reggae artist that does a ballad now. It's way more accepted. Once upon a time, it was, boy, if you're not doing roots music, you're not a reggae artist, you know. And you have people like Coffey who won the Grammy Award. And as far as I'm concerned, she's not a regular artist. She's definitely a dancehall artist. But, you know, I would like to see a little difference in that. Having said that, I'd love to see dancehall have its own category at the Grammys and reggae have a category. I think the music has done enough throughout the world where we could have two categories of Jamaican music in the Grammy Awards. I don't think it's fair to just have reggae because you have artists from Jamaica who are not necessarily reggae artists per se. They're more dancehall-ish. They're more into hip-hop and stuff like that. And it's not fair for them to not have a voice of expression that can go beyond just saying that you're a reggae artist, if you understand where I'm coming from, no?
Yeah, sure, and the themes and the texture of the music for dancehall and can be very different than reggae and third world over the years and you've been in the industry now for 40 plus years, but third world is really an eclectic sort of fusion band. Would you agree with that? Is that you've brought in a lot of influences that maybe roots reggae traditionalists wouldn't have done?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I'm saying that we were probably way ahead of our time when we were doing that. You know, and now, as I said to you, now the blend really is very acceptable. But coming from the days back with Burning Spear and Culture and all the kind of people, and when Third World was recording, you know, you had Mighty Diamonds, you had Bob, you had, in fact, our Now That We From Love song, I think really influenced Bob to, you know, to do Could You Be Loved and that kind of song. Because it really, you know, he really wanted some up-tempo stuff. And I thought Exodus was a good start for him in terms of, like, coming up with something that had a nice funk feel to it, a nice R&B feel to it. I really thought I thought that he was going to go even further that way, you know, with jamming and stuff like that. And it's a blend. It was a blend of using that running four bass drum, you know, and, you know, you could actually play that in a disco, in R&B disco. They used to play Exodus in the discos. So, you know, I thought that that was really cool. And, you know, as I said, the Marlins are very, very, very good at doing what they do. And they're very much into blending right now, blending various music styles, coming up with different issues and stuff. And I think they've done a great thing for reggae in terms of not keeping the music just in one direction, you know?
Sure, sure.
To have its own feet, have its own wheels, you know?
Yeah, and you know, you can make the argument that reggae itself is a blending, and Caribbean culture to a large extent is Creole, so it is a mixture of all different flavors and textures, and with the food, the music, the languages. So it's just sort of following with that same sort of theme there. And, you know, after we are done talking here, I'm going to be playing You're Not the Only One featuring Damian Junior Gong Marley there. So how was it like recording that single? And do you have an album coming out with him as producer, correct?
Well, the album has been out, you know.
Oh, it has? Okay.
More work to be done. It's been out for a while. And, that particular song really was very, very, most of the songs were very much done by jamming. You know, we just set up and we just play, you know? And then when Damon hear an idea that he likes, then we set about developing it.
Sure, sure.
Set about developing what we were going to sing, what we were going to say in the song, how we were going to deal with the song, you know? And I think that it's very, very cool way of doing music, how he did it. It's really cool. And we used to do stuff like that in the early days, you know. And you know, that's how we used to create music. And after a while, I think a lot of people used to go off on their own and create their own little song and then bring the song to the band kind of thing. And it changed a little bit, you know, because that we were there all sitting together, playing together, and the ideas came. That was like in the early days with, like, 96 Degrees came like that, you know, and you know, Feel a Little Better and all those songs. They came out of jamming together. And that's what Damian brought back to us in this modern time when we started the album with. We all went down to his studio and we just set up the instrument and play. We just come up with an idea and just develop it, you know.
Sure, sure.
and
you go way back with Damian and the Marleys.
Right back to a baby.
Yeah, and...
Right back to a baby. Right back to him being a little baby.
Sure, sure. And your son is a musician also, and I was reading an article where they said that your son and Damian were very close, and Damian spent a lot of time at your house.
That's very true. Damian practically grew up in my house, and my son Shia and him, and you see, the two mothers were very close together. Damian's mommy and my ex-wife, they were very, very tight. They had a store together, and, you know, so majority of the time, if Damian wasn't at my house, Shia was over at his house. You know?
Yep.
A lot of people don't know that my youngest son, Stevie, he's also a musician too.
Oh.
He played with Chronix for 6 years.
Oh, okay.
But he's not currently in the business now. And I think it has a lot to do with the whole business of the pandemic coming along and just freezing the music business. Because he had just broke with Chronix right when that happened. And there really has not been any bands that have reformed since that time. So I'm just hoping that, you know, that changes and that he'll get back into it. But he's a good guitar player, man. He's a good guitar player.
Yeah, we're so excited here in Duluth to have, you know, all of our festivals were canceled like the rest of the world. And it's going to be so exciting to have that back on Saturday. And really it's, you know, one of the first major festivals that are back in line, and we can just cross our fingers that the variants will stay away from us, but or at least be controlled.
I keep my fingers crossed on that too, and you guys really have a really interesting lineup too. I'm looking forward to hearing all those groups play as well, you know. So I'll probably be spending a lot of time in the park that day listening to all the various acts, because it's just something that I have done for a long, long time, over a year and a half, and it's just going to be good to hear some live music, you know.
Oh, exactly. And what can we expect from the Third World Set as the headliners of the World Music and Reggae and World Music Festival? What can we, are we going to hear some old tunes and maybe a lot from the new? Or
old and new, old and new. And I'm just about to go into rehearsal now, so I guess some of that will, you know, will come together when I see what happens today. But old and new, you'll get the big hits and you're going to get the new hits, because you have Loving You Is Easy, produced by Damien. You have You're Not the Only One, you know, and now we have the one with Busy Signal called Feel Good. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I really can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to it. And I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, because you know, and I know how difficult it is to travel these days, how strange it is.
Yep, yep.
Once upon a time, it was a cinch, you know. And then I think after 9/11, things changed a lot with the whole business of going through this heavy checking with TSA and all of that. And then now, with the pandemic now, it's gotten even more, you know, it's crippled everything. I was very, very pleased to go to England this year and perform for a private event. It was just something very special. It was a special trip for me to go over there and to be back in the UK. I had so much of my roots was in the UK in terms of, you know, I spent a lot of time in England during the Chris Blackwell time when we just signed with Ireland. I spent a lot of time over there, you know, recording, and spent time. That's where I met Aswad and I met Steel Pulse, and, you know, and we've shared a friendship since that time that's just been really, really close.
Yeah, sure.
We're very, very close, you know.
And famously in Bob Marley and the Wailers' tour of England in, what is it, 1973? Third World was on that tour, correct?
Yes, 1975. Yeah.
75, okay, sorry about that. Yeah, and that's pretty pretty neat to be in that Blackwell sort of Island Records world that's sort of, you know, I would say it was already happening with Toots and the Maytals and with the film soundtrack for The Harder They Come. But really, you know, he put it on the map in a lot of ways.
Of course he did. There's no question about that. Remember, no, he would have had Jimmy Cliff. I remember Chris was involved with Trojan Records, you know, which is really the first real label that really did a lot of that stuff, you know.
Sure, sure.
Young, Gifted and Black with Baba and Marcia. You had To Experience, Baba and Lee. You had some songs that went really high on the British charts, you know. Desmond Dekker, Poor Me Israelite, you know. You had some serious contributions from people before Bob came along, but clearly I think Chris made Bob like a rock star kind of image. And that really, I think, sold the music to a wider rock audience. And it's, people always say that it's basically, you know, the white college kids that made reggae, you know?
Yeah.
The R&B, you know, the so-called black music listeners, they didn't play reggae at first. All those R&B stations, they didn't play reggae. It was white college kids who played it on the college radio. And people like yourself on public radio and stuff, that's how the music had its genesis in terms of people hearing it. And then it, you know, and then it became popular. People started to like the songs, started to like the artists. And I have to really take my hat off to Toots as well, because I think Toots was one of the first guys who really stepped out there and was out there touring, especially in California, you know.
Yep, yep. And
great place where reggae broke. Lots and lots of California stories, and, you know, that clubs and stuff in California, they were doing reggae in those clubs way, way before, you know, a lot of people were doing it. So, you know, I have to really take a look at that, because I think that's part of the whole legacy of America appreciating our music, you know, our Jamaican music.
Well, and it played a big part in the civil rights movement to a large extent, and Caribbean music and Caribbean, resistance rebellion really has influenced the United States in very positive ways, I think, you know.
Yeah, that's super great. Great to hear you say that. It's just very heartwarming, my brother. Trust me.
Yes, yes. And we have to make a shout out to Toots Hibbert, and who passed away from COVID this last year, and one of the tragedies, many tragedies of this pandemic. And it was great to talk with you. I'm hoping that I'll be able to meet you when you get to Duluth here. You might like, if you've never been to Duluth, I think you'll like the venue because it's sort of overlooking the bay, and you'll have, you know, big ocean and lake ships right behind the stage coming up. So it might be nice for you.
My manager had the camera was telling me that it's really beautiful and I'm going to really enjoy it. So I can't wait. And definitely we're going to meet. That's a definite.
Yep.
You just set it up and I'll make it happen, bro.
All right. Definitely. That'd be great. So I'll be there all day, and for the listeners out there, KUMD will have a booth, and I will be manning the booth for some of the time, and we'll have some giveaways, and it's one of the highlights of our summer and the highlights as a producer and DJ here for Caribbean Roots of my year. It's sort of my Christmas in a way, is the reggae, and to actually bring some of that diversity to our northern city at the top of the map. So I do appreciate that. And we'll be in touch here, and definitely I'm looking forward to meeting you, Kat. And any last words for the people of Northern Minnesota?
Well, Northern Minnesota, get ready. We're coming, and I can't wait to be a part of what seems to be a really cool event. And as I say, I'm really, really, really looking forward to it 100%. And I'll see you guys at the end of this week.
All right. So without further ado, we're going to be playing the new single here from Third World, featuring Damon Jr. Gong Marley. This is You're Not the Only One.
If you're out there somewhere feeling lonely, you're not the only one.